Text 123.
I wished, yet feared, to find him. I felt the terrible news must be told, and I longed to get it over. But how to do it, I did not know. He was there, at least a few yards further in the park, leant against an old ash tree, his hat off and his hair soaked with the dew that had gathered on the budded branches and fell pattering round him. He had been standing a long time in that position, for I saw a pair of owsels passing and repassing, scarcely 3 feet from him, busy in building their nest, and regarding his proximity no more than that of a piece of timber. They flew off at my approach, and he raised his eyes and spoke. "She's dead," he said. "I've not waited for you to learn that. Put your handkerchief away. Don't snivel before me. Damn you all! She wants none of your tears." I was weeping as much for him as her. We do sometimes pity creatures that have none of the feeling either for themselves or others. And when I first looked into his face, I perceived that he had got intelligence of the catastrophe, and a foolish notion struck me that his heart was quelled and he prayed, because his lips moved and his gaze was bent on the ground. "Yes, she's dead," I answered, checking my sobs and drying my cheeks. "Gone to heaven, I hope, where we may, everyone, join her, if we take due warning and leave our evil ways to follow good." "Did she take due warning, then?" asked Heathcliff, attempting a sneer. "Did she die like a saint? Come, give me a true history of the event. How did—" He endeavoured to pronounce the name, but could not manage it. And compressing his mouth, he held a silent combat with his inward agony, defying meanwhile my sympathy with an unflinching, ferocious stare. "How did she die?" he resumed at last, fain, notwithstanding his hardihood, to have a support behind him, for after the struggle he trembled in spite of himself, to his very finger ends. "Poor wretch," I thought. "You have a heart and nerves the same as your brother men. Why should you be anxious to conceal them? Your pride cannot blind God. You tempt him to wring them till he forces a cry of humiliation." "Quietly as a lamb," I answered aloud. She drew a sigh and stretched herself like a child reviving and sinking again to sleep. And 5 minutes after, I felt one little pulse at her heart and nothing more. "And did she ever mention me?" he asked, hesitating, as if he dreaded the answer to his question would introduce details that he could not bear to hear. "Her senses never returned. She recognized nobody from the time you left her," I said. "She lies with a sweet smile on her face, and her latest ideas wandered back to pleasant early days. Her life closed in a gentle dream. May she wake as kindly in the other world." "May she wake in torment," he cried with frightful vehemence, stamping his foot and groaning in a sudden paroxysm of ungovernable passion. "Why, she's a liar to the end. Where is she? Not there, not in heaven, not perished. Where? Oh, you said you cared nothing for my sufferings, and I pray one prayer. I repeat it till my tongue stiffens. Catherine Earnshaw, may you not rest as long as I am living. You said I killed you. Haunt me, then. The murdered do haunt their murderers. I believe, I know that ghosts have wandered on earth. Be with me always. Take any form. Drive me mad. Only do not leave me in this abyss where I cannot find you. Oh, God, it is unutterable. I cannot live without my life. I cannot live without my soul." He dashed his head against the knotted trunk, and, lifting up his eyes, howled, not like a man, but like a savage beast getting goaded to death with knives and spears. I observed several splashes of blood about the bark of the tree, and his hand and forehead were both stained. Probably the scene I witnessed was a repetition of others acted during the night. It hardly moved my compassion. It appalled me. Still, I felt reluctant to quit him so. But the moment he recollected himself enough to notice me watching, he thundered a command for me to go, and I obeyed. He was beyond my skill to quiet or console.